Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 19th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya wins a seat on the UN Security Council.
The honor that it's been given by the United Nations is to ensure that it does represent not just Kenya's interests, but the interest of the entire continent. And to do that, we need every country on board.
Malayans are protesting again today, Friday, to demand President Keita's resignation. A photographer is jailed in Zambia for libeling officials on social media. There is an epidemic of gender-based violence among South Africa's sexual minorities, and Malawi's High Court summons four Electoral Commission members to explain their appointment.
The Malawi Congress Party petitioned the court to give an interpretation in the manner the Electoral Commission has to be constituted, because we feel there is gross irregularity in the manner President Peter Mutharika has constituted the Malawi Electoral Commission.
Maurice Mutale is National Publicity Secretary of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. Those stories plus Samson Omale's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Has won a United Nations Security Council seat after beating neighboring Djibouti in the second round of voting yesterday, Thursday. The win came barely a day after Kenya failed to attain a two-thirds majority vote on Wednesday, thereby leading to a second round of voting yesterday, where Kenya beat Djibouti 129 votes to 62. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
The African Union AU had already endorsed Kenya for the United Nations Security Council seat, and with 191 countries voting, Kenya scored 129 votes, beating Djibouti, which scored 62 votes. This was the second round of voting after the first phase of voting saw Kenya's victory insufficient to win the UN seat, following Kenya's failure to attain the two-thirds of votes. Speaking in Nairobi, international relations expert Professor Macharia Munene said that the African Union endorsement for Kenya was a move to ensure Kenya represents Africa in matters of security, and that these need support from all African countries.
The honor that it's been given by the United Nations is to ensure that it does represent not just Kenya's interests, but the interest of the entire continent. And to do that, we need everybody, every country on board, to be supporting, advising, to be together as Kenya undertakes the honor of representing the interests of Africa.
Some of the decisions Kenya may be involved in are sanctions, authorizing use of force to preserve peace, as well as electing judges of the International Court of Justice. Another foreign affairs expert, Dr. Kenneth Kambona, said that Kenya will have responsibility to ensure the interest of African countries is aired at the council.
Kenya does not see gaining this seat as a privilege, but rather as a responsibility. And therefore, it will take on the concerns of Djibouti all the way to the Security Council and represent the region. We also understand that this is about being a much more magnanimous and accommodating country. We are not there to represent the interests of only one nation for 45, 50 million people, but 270 million people in the Horn of Africa.
Kenya's Foreign Affairs Permanent Secretary Macharia Kamau, speaking to Citizen TV after Kenya's win, said that electing Kenya is an important approach that will see Kenya play a vital role in African leadership.
This is a historical moment for our country. We are going to seize the opportunity to become a singularly important player in global leadership, trying to ensure that we play our rightful role in promoting what is good and true for our continent.
Kenya will join 9 other non-permanent members and could get a chance to preside over the council's sittings with an influential opportunity on set agendas. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Malawi's High Court on Thursday summoned four Malawi Electoral Commission members to explain to the court their appointment. Main opposition Malawi Congress Party had petitioned the court to clarify the appointment of the four. MCP National Publicity Secretary Maurice Montale said the four are from the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, when in fact each major party is supposed to have two commissioners. The court summons comes as there are reports quoting the new Elections Commission chairperson as saying that the June 23rd elections could be delayed for about 6 weeks for logistical reasons.
Dr. Lazarus Chakwera and the Malawi Congress Party petitioned the court to give an interpretation in the manner the Electoral Commission has to be constituted, because we feel there is gross irregularity in the manner President Peter Mutharika has constituted the Malawi Electoral Commission on two fronts. Number one is because of the imbalance that is there. DPP and ourselves were supposed to have three commissioners each in the MEC. But what we are seeing now is a gross irregularity, because Peter Mutharika chose to give us only two commissioners and then DPP four commissioners, and that is against the law. But also, apart from the imbalance, two commissioners that have been reappointed in the Malawi Electoral Commission were declared incompetent by three bodies: the Constitutional Court, Malawi Parliament, and the Supreme Court of Appeal. So we feel that is a gross irregularity, because somebody who has been declared incompetent cannot be reappointed in the same commission where he or she was declared incompetent. So we ask the court to give us an interpretation, and that's why the courts are summoning all the other commissioners, so that they can go and explain exactly why they have been placed in MEC in that manner.
The Opposition Alliance, what do you know about the possibility, as being suggested in some published reports, that the Elections Commission might be considering delaying the June 23rd vote because of logistics?
As an alliance, all we know is that we are voting on 23rd June 2020. This day came from the Malawi Electoral Commission themselves, because initially we were going to vote on 2nd July, but they are the ones who said, no, we have to vote on 23rd June because we have to present by the end of 150 days as given by the Constitutional Court. So it would be very strange for Malawians to hear from the same Malawi Electoral Commission that the date is going to shift again. That would be very strange. We don't want to be confusing people. To us, those logistics cannot stop the voting on 23rd of June. So they just have a job, a duty, a responsibility to make sure that they have addressed every issue and they have facilitated the polls, and Malawians should go to vote on 23rd of June. Otherwise, if there is a change, then that change must come with convincing reasons, because we have to be consulted in any case and agree that those challenges are big enough to necessitate the change of the polling day.
Maurice Montale is the National Publicity Secretary for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. In Mali, an opposition coalition plans to embark on yet another demonstration in the capital, Bamako, today, Friday, to demand the resignation of President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta. Niaga Diop, youth leader and one of the organizers of the protest, says Malians are aware that President Keïta has failed to keep his promise and needs to step down. Analysts say today's protest is expected to bring business activities in the capital, Bamako, to a standstill. The protest comes despite calls by the president for a dialogue with the opposition. Diop tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the protest will continue as scheduled on Friday because the president has yet to respond to an expired ultimatum to step down.
We are going to organize a week of petition again tomorrow, because we did the first one there in 2 weeks ago. For the first one, we gave to the president, Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta, a deadline, an ultimatum to his resignation. But the president didn't the resignation. So for us, it's normal to make another protestation to show to the president, the people, the population is already is determined for the resignation. So after the first one, the president did communication to the people. He organized some negotiation. For us, it was impossible to meet the president for the our position of tomorrow. So it is fine. We are going to organize our position on Friday and to ask the president to leave the power. So it is another demonstration for us. We expect to get more people than the first Friday.
Let me ask you this, Niaga. The president last Sunday said he was prepared to hold dialogue with members of the opposition, including the leaders of the coalition, to resolve your concerns you have. Why are you not taking up this opportunity to have a discussion with him?
Peter, you have to understand, we don't trust for two of the people. It's impossible for us to open a negotiation with the president in this situation. The former president, General Musa Kawe, why negotiation with the president? But for us, they asked the president to make a negotiation with us directly. But we refused because we know the president. We know he can't do what we want. The only one we want is a resignation. What we are going to discuss with him? If it is not about the resignation, the term of resignation, so we don't see the importance to be, to discuss with the president.
Niaga Diouf is a Malian youth leader and one of the organizers of today's protest, calling on President Ibrahim Boubacar to step down. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Bamako. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 19th. Zambian police have detained award-winning photographer Chela Tukuta for criminal libel. Authorities say Tukuta posted on social media disparaging comments about Information and Broadcasting Minister Dora Celia, Zambia Revenue Authority Commissioner General Kingsley Chanda, Northern Province Permanent Secretary Charles C. Panje, and former presidential spokesperson Amos Chanda. Chanda says the allegations have caused discontent among certain sections of Zambian society to the point that some people have been mobilizing to attack photographer Tukuta.
He's been on the campaign. He has set up a Facebook page for 3 weeks nonstop. He was broadcasting that she was involved in an illicit practice of trafficking girls as sex slaves. Something quite outlandish, that she was involved in a prostitution ring where girls are being sold. And he was alleging that the Chinese company has given him evidence. And about the permanent secretary for Northern Province, that he had evidence that he was engaged in illegal deals in Dubai, and that the head of the tax revenue authority was involved in the abuse of taxpayers' money. We are all surprised that this guy, consistently for 3 weeks, has been publishing this. And some of these allegations are so outrageous that they've caused some discontent among certain sections of society, that some of these people are mobilizing themselves to attacking physically. So that constitutes now a threat to public security and public order, which is why the police have picked him up for criminal libel.
Amos, the Minister of Information, Madame Celia, has said that the proliferation of media institutions in Zambia calls for strengthening media laws. Recently, there was this Prime Television that was shut down. The question is Zambia resorting to press censorship?
There's no press censorship libel law under which this lunatic has been charged. It's an adaptation of the British law that exists to regulate public conduct, that if a person accuses people in a manner where it can cause those people to commit a public offense, that criminal libel law will come in place. See, it's a British law that has not been changed whatsoever. The Prime Television license, from what I understand, lapsed because under the Zambian law, the Independent Broadcasting Authority, regulates broadcasting stations, and they give licenses which are renewed every year. I'm no longer in government. I do not understand exactly what happens, but the official statement by the permanent secretary, Minister of Information, is that the license lapsed and the owners of the TV stations did not renew it. By that act alone, there are provisions in the law that says if a license lapses and it is not renewed, and the matter is in court, so I'm limited how much I can say. But I understand the court referred the matter for arbitration between the Broadcasting Authority, IBA, and Prime Television. So the minister is calling for effective ethical conduct of media organizations. Under Zambian law, every sector of society is regulated. As for the media, the preference has been for self-regulation, which I understand that the journalists themselves have now come to an agreement that they will come up with a piece of legislation which will provide for self-regulation. What is coming to the fore is that there is a call for greater accountability within Zambian society, whether you're a private citizen, government institutions, a newspaper, for instance, like this photographer has been arrested. He has a grand now to go and tell the judge that, in fact, he has seen Honorable Syria trafficking in young girls, that he has seen me as a monster taking $5 million.
Amos Chanda is the former spokesperson for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. South Africa's epidemic of gender-based violence is especially harrowing for the nation's sexual minorities, who say they regularly experience violence because of their gender expression and sexual identity. It's a little-known part of what President Cyril Ramaphosa on Wednesday described as a second pandemic of violence in a nation already struggling with the viral pandemic. VOA's Anita Powell spoke to activists and friends of the LGBT activist and dancer who was stabbed to death last week.
Kevin Fortuyn's body was a thing of wonder. It defied gravity, leaping, twisting, and melting into graceful, often unbelievable, shapes. Fortuyn, a dancer who identified as gender fluid but used a male pronoun, was a sight to see in an industry dominated by women and in a country where, activists say, toxic masculinity translates to the systemic abuse of non-male bodies. Last week, Fortuyn became one of those victims after he was stabbed to death in Cape Town. He had documented threats against his life for years. While the circumstances of his death are unusual, his assailant was a teenage girl, his friend Trayvon Moo says this is yet another example of chronic disrespect of those who don't fit traditional gender roles.
The reason why I'm so vocal about the protection of Black same bodies is because in our country specifically, we are seeing a rise in gender-based violence. It's clear that anything femme is seen as weaker. And when you are born in a cis male body and present yourself in a more feminine or as a trans human, your body is as equally under threat. It is almost as if masculinity and the patriarchy sees you as an existential threat to the ideals that they've built over hundreds of years. And it's just not the case. All we want is to live.
A survey by South African rights group OUT found that half of Black respondents knew people who had been killed because of their sexual orientation. On Wednesday night, President Cyril Ramaphosa made his strongest statements yet on the nation's unceasing wave of gender-based violence, calling it a war being waged against the women and children of our country. Statistics show that most victims are girls and women who conform to gender and sexual norms. More than 2,900 women were murdered in 2019, according to police statistics, which means, activists say, that a South African woman is killed approximately every 3 hours. Activist and filmmaker Beverly Ditsy, who marched with other activists 2 years ago on the president's office to demand action on gender-based violence, said she welcomed the president's words and his acknowledgement of five of the movement's 24 demands. However, she said, he gave no deadlines for action and made no attempt to address structural inequalities.
It is amazing that an African man, a patriarchal man, stood up and actually said that, said, okay, I acknowledge that this is a problem. The only problem here is that he was telling us what we've been telling him. for years. It's not a second pandemic. It's a pandemic that's always been there. But actually, what are the actions? So far, it all felt very kind of lip service.
Trayvon Moo wasn't surprised at the president's omission of sexual minorities.
The president leaving us out of his speech is nothing new. Also, I don't think that there is enough spotlight put on characterizing gender-based violence through the lens of sexuality. So looking at when gender-based violence is a hate crime, the violence is not propagated only by gender, but it's fueled also by a hate and a disdain to our very existence.
Activist Tokozani Indaba leads the Intalelo Foundation, which supports survivors of abuse and sexual violence and also works with sexual minorities. We asked her how she feels about the wave of violence against women, girls, and sexual minorities.
I'm so tired of fighting. I'm so tired of talking. I'm tired of marching. I'm just tired of everything because it just seems like it falls in deaf ears. Nobody's listening. You know, while we're talking and marching and doing all this and the government is not listening, women are getting killed, young girls are getting raped. I just believe that the court system itself is failing the women and is failing all women. Trans women suffer as women too. Lesbian women suffer as women too.
That's a hard truth that the nation's LGBTQ community is seeing again this week. Fort Wayne was 28. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Africa's person here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with some athletics news. Lawyers for former World Athletics Chief Senegal's Lamine Diack, who is on trial for corruption on Thursday, protested their client's innocence and said the 87-year-old will die in jail if sentenced to a prison term. French financial prosecutors on Wednesday sought a 4-year jail sentence for the Senegalese, saying he and his son, Papa Massata Diack, were at the heart of a scheme that solicited bribes worth millions of euros from Russian athletes to cover up failed doping tests and allow them to continue competing. Prosecutors had sought a 5-year sentence for Papa Massata Diack. Lamine Diack's lawyers on Thursday said there were no tangible elements proving Lamine Diack's participation in the scheme and put the blame on his absent son. In basketball news, the Egypt Basketball Federation has announced that action will return on August 15th after the Ministry of Youth and Sports gave them the green light to proceed. The clubs will start with indoor training from July the 1st in small groups of twos and fours before going into indoor training with a minimum number of players allowed. The players will be tested for coronavirus before they enter the training camps. This ends a 3-month break to all basketball action in Egypt because of the coronavirus pandemic. Elsewhere in East Africa, this year's Kenya Volleyball Federation National League season has been nullified. The season, which had served off in February, was to run until July as opposed to November as part of the concerted efforts by the federation to align its competitions with the International Volleyball Federation calendar. According to the International Volleyball Federation calendar, federations should start their leagues in October and end in April. KVF had suspended the league indefinitely in March following the outbreak of the COVID-19 virus. And from South Africa comes some cheering news for cricket fans as the biggest names in South African cricket will return to the field for an exhibition match in Centurion on June the 27th. Three teams will play in one 36-over match in a never-before-seen format and will be South Africa's first televised live sports event since the country went into lockdown because of COVID-19. Each team will face a total of 12 overs split into two halves of 6 overs. Each half will be against a different team. Most of South Africa's top players will be in action. The team will be captained by AB de Villiers, Quinton de Kock and Kagiso Rabada. The match will be played without spectators. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, June 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.